Welcome back to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. I'm your host, Dana Montes of Real Food with Dana. I'm a nutritionist and body image coach, teaching women how to heal their relationship with food and their bodies, ditch the diet cycle for good, and truly thrive with real food, one delicious meal at a time. Welcome back to another episode. This week on the podcast, we have Jessica Kristen, who is a nutritional therapy practitioner and IIN health coach, and we are talking all about empowering women to take charge of their health and get their cycles back naturally. So, spoiler alert slash warning for all of you guys, like males, who listen to this podcast, there's going to be a little bit of period talk, just so you know. It's not through the whole episode, and we're not talking about any of the details of menstrual cycles, but you might want to skip ahead when you get to that part. Anyways, as we are talking about this, just a general medical and mental health disclaimer, especially for the next couple of weeks of the podcast. So you guys know, all of the information that we talk about in this podcast is intended to be provided as just general information only, and you should never use it as a substitute for medical or mental health advice, recommendations, or treatment, or diagnosis, or anything like that. So in the episode, Jess is talking about her own personal story and her history of overexercising, of undereating, having severe adrenal fatigue and gut issues, losing her period and food fears, and her journey to healing. So if it sounds familiar, it's kind of like me. And Jess and I are very similar, as we figured out during the podcast. So we're also talking about how Jess had to completely alter her view of what being healthy meant and kind of redefine her identity as a person in order to rebalance her hormones, to regain her health, break the diet cycle, and the overexercising cycle, and finally get her period back. So enjoy the episode with Jess.
So my story is pretty long, so I'll give kind of a condensed version, and then I'm sure we can go back and get into more details of everything. So pretty much my entire life can remember just always comparing myself to other people, never really being super confident in my own skin, had a really tough time throughout middle school, high school, college, just kind of finding who I was. So I just would sort of adapt to those around me and act and do and wear the clothes and do the things that I thought I was supposed to be doing, which I think is pretty typical for a female, sadly, growing up, you know, in this day and age. So in terms of weight, I mean, in high school, I played sport, so I never had an issue with weight. I mean, let me be, I've never been overweight, mm-hmm. per se. But in high school, I do remember just like looking at other girls and thinking, oh, I wish my stomach was flatter, or I wish I looked this way. And so I definitely had those thoughts pretty early on, probably really as early as like elementary or middle school. And then when I got into college is when I really became super aware of my body. I gained a decent amount of weight, as most of us do when we're eating terribly and drinking five nights a week. So that's when I sort of really started playing around with different dieting and ways to lose weight. I remember me and a girlfriend did one of those, you know, drink shakes for 3 days. God even knows what the hell was in those. I like don't even want to go back and look. I went through a phase where I was taking like ephedrine before the gym. I would, you know, not restrict calories and just anything I could do to try to morph my body into what I thought it should look like. But I would do that. And then on the weekends, you know, I would binge on pizza and, like I said, be out partying and drinking, et cetera. So just did not have a healthy lifestyle in college. Looking back now, I'm like, oh, no wonder I had so many issues down the road. But, and same with college. I was always floating from group to group, trying to find my own, and had a really difficult time doing that. So once I graduated, I decided my main goal was I just want to lose this college weight. And in college, I didn't play sports or anything. I did work out, so I would go to classes at the gym, and I started running a little bit, again, more just because I thought running was the way that I could lose weight. So I would go on the treadmill, you know, at the campus gym and do the classes and all that. then I graduated. I did Weight Watchers. I did Atkins. I did, again, played around with pretty much every diet you could think of and saw some results. But then I also started to get more into running. And I actually started to really enjoy it. It was a really good stress relief for me. And I was pretty good at it. And for the first time in my life, I felt like I found this thing that I was actually naturally really good at and could really identify with, which I really hadn't ever found before because I struggled with that. I played sports in high school, like I mentioned, but I was never great at them. I just sort of did them because everyone else was. So running became a passion. You know, I was good at it. I started doing races, and then I'll never forget, I did my first half marathon and I finished it. And I was like, when's the next one? Let's sign up. Let's do this. And as I started running, when I first started running, I was still doing like low calorie, sugar free. I was eating vegetarian at the time. I will say, as I got into running, I started learning a little bit more about kind of health and food and realized that, you know, low calorie wasn't necessarily the way to go, that Splenda was actually probably really bad for me. So I made some changes. I started eating more kind of whole grains. So I did a lot of like oatmeal and whole wheat bread, and I still wouldn't do red meat, but I would do like some chicken and fish and things like that. So I did start to change my diet a bit. But anyways, as I started running, my body completely changed. Like I lost a ton of weight naturally because I was changing my lifestyle, and people started complimenting me on that, you know, telling me I looked great, asking me what I was doing. And I really started feeding off of that. And looking back, I don't think I really even realized it at the time, but that fed into more running, you know, less eating. I'll never forget the time I was at Express and put on a pair of pants, and I was a size zero. And I literally called my mom. I was like, oh my God, mom, I'm a size zero. And I was so excited about it. So kind of rabbit hole that spun me into a place where I got really unhealthy with it. And again, it took me a long time to realize that, but it really became an addiction. I mean, I would skip social events if I had to run. If I was like going away for the weekend, I would wake up at literally 4 or 5 a.m. just so I could get a run in before I left. I would get so stressed out if I wasn't able to run or work out. And then my food was based off of that. You know, if I knew I was going out and I was going to be, you know, eating a cake or having wine or whatever it is, I would have to get like a long run in before that, or else I wouldn't allow myself those things. So fast forward, I actually, at this time I was teaching special education. That's what my master's is in. And I was getting really burnt out and I decided to leave, and I did the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. So I got my health coach certification. And with that, I actually got hired at a local holistic practice and started there as a associate nutritionist. And that practice, was probably the beginning of when I started to recognize that there were signs that my body was giving me that things were not okay. I started learning about hormones and blood sugar and the importance of fat in your diet, the importance of, I added red meat back into my diet, and just started really educating myself. And at the time, I had started losing my hair like significantly. It was like falling out, thinning, and I was so self-conscious all of the time. And I was cold all the time. Like my hands and feet were freezing all the time. I didn't have any gut issues quite yet. Those came a little bit later, but my, you know, energy and sleep. And so again, just sort of learning all of this, I was looking at my own self and realized, wow, I'm probably not taking care of my body the way that I should be. And even then, I did start making some changes. So I recognized that I needed to maybe run a little bit less and eat a little bit more. So I made some small changes. But at the time, I was still comfortable with where my weight was. So I sort of ignored the signs that were going on. Fast forward, again, this is a pretty long story. But after that, it took me, it was probably about over the course of about 2 to 3 years, I will say I had a lot of stressors. I left that job. I moved back home. I moved from Boston to Denver. So I did have a lot of like life stressors that were going on. And even though I altered, you know, so I was eating more real foods, I was eating more overall, I still was struggling. And at this time, I also stopped taking birth control. And that's when I stopped getting my period. So I didn't get my period for about 2.5 years. And this is interesting. Every conventional doctor that I went to, you know, they wanted to put me back on birth control, which I refused to do. But the one thing they said to me was that I wasn't eating enough, and I would get so defensive, and I'd be like, "You don't know what I'm eating. You don't know my lifestyle." And I would just,
"You don't know my life,
right? You don't know anything." And in my defense, they didn't really ask; they just like told me. But looking back on it, that was the one thing they had in common that I will say they were absolutely right about. And I got so defensive because I just didn't, I didn't want to hear it. The idea of gaining weight still absolutely terrified me. So fast forward, I moved to Denver. At this point, things just start going really downhill. I'm still dealing with the hair loss, the fatigue. And this is when I started developing some gut issues, bloating, which I'd honestly, it's so funny because I worked with clients all the time that would talk to me about bloating, and I didn't even really know what it was. I was like, I don't know what this feels like. All of a sudden, I'm like, okay, yep, know what this feels like now. You know, so got really bloated. I gained probably about 20 pounds in the course of like maybe 6 months. And then finally, I found an NTP who's actually a good friend of mine now and started working with her. And that's when I really just sort of took a deeper look and recognized that I had low thyroid, severe adrenal fatigue. So my cortisol was all over the place. I had high estrogen, low progesterone, and a lot of gut issues, which later I found out I did have a parasite and then bacteria that I had to work through. So yeah, that was kind of when I guess I really hit quote unquote rock bottom and felt, I just felt terrible. It's like I was doing all of these things to try to maintain this body that I thought I needed to have. And then that led me to being absolutely like the most unhealthy I've ever been. And it's so interesting too, because I talk about this all the time with people, like, is trying to be healthy making you unhealthy? Because looking back at it, everyone in my life would have told you, like, if you asked like words to describe Jess, it would have been, oh my God, she's super fit and in shape and she's so healthy. And that's what I was known for, you know? Mm-hmm. And I so strongly identified with that. I didn't know anything else. And the idea of doing anything but that was just absolutely terrifying. But in reality, that's what led me to actually becoming the most unhealthy I ever had in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, we start doing these things, you know, as whether you're middle school, high school, college age, or like younger to mid 20s is usually when it hits, you know, all of us women, right? But we, on the one hand, we think we're supposed to be doing these things because they are quote unquote healthy, when really healthy is associated with being thinner and being smaller and controlling our food and controlling our exercise and controlling our bodies. When really, if taken to the extreme, which most people do with most things in this country, because that is just our like overwhelming personality, it's work hard, right? Play hard. It's, you know, hustle harder. It's, you know, don't sleep till you're dead. It's take things to the extreme. When you do that, you can run the risk of not only developing disordered eating and disordered exercise patterns leading all the way to potentially an eating disorder, but then all these other symptoms and health conditions that can come down the line from following something that we think was supposed to be healthy, you know, running healthy, eating well, healthy, you know, making sure you get enough sleep, like being within a certain BMI, which is bullshit to begin with. And just like, it's crazy that in the original pursuit of health, within, which then equates to the pursuit of weight loss and the pursuit of being smaller because we think this is more worthy, we're actually making ourselves less healthy in the long term, and we're losing our cycles, and we're getting thyroid issues and adrenal issues and gut issues and like all of these things that then take so long to get out of.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I've been dealing with all of this for like 3 years now, and I'm actually currently fighting candida, which is just kind of aftermath of everything else I did. Mm-hmm. And knowing what I know now, yeah, I look back and it's just, it's scary the amount of stress that I put on my body for so freaking long, for so long. And yeah, it's these messages that are being sent to us by the fitness industry, you know, especially for women, it's like boot camp and CrossFit. And I mean, I know for me, I literally used to think that it wasn't a workout unless I was sweating my ass off by the end and literally wanted to die. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I was teaching spin at one point because I taught some classes like throughout the years, and I would go to the gym, I would do an hour-long workout before teaching the spin class, and then I would go teach like a 45-minute spin class, and you know, like, and then eating probably 1,200-1,300 calories a day. And it's like, wow, okay, no wonder my hormones got totally jacked up.
Right, exactly. So we were talking about this before we started recording, but so many people fall into this very similar camp of following all this advice and also dealing with a very high stress lifestyle, whether that's, you know, from their job or it's as a result of under exercise or over exercising and under eating, and then getting severe adrenal fatigue and having gut issues and thyroid issues, and then you lose your period or you haven't had it for, you know, 5 or 6 years, or maybe it's extremely rare or few or far in between. So when you realize that all of this was a problem and definitely contributing to the symptoms that you were having, what was the first thing that you did to try and dig yourself out of it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And one thing I like to point out is, for me, like I said, I had signs from my body very early on that things weren't okay, that I chose to ignore. That's part of why I'm so passionate about the field that we're in and helping women to recognize those signs and not having to hit that rock bottom like I hit. For me, when I finally realized I had to do something different, it actually was triggered by a breakup. Because this is another pattern that I had, is anytime I would go through a big stressor, specifically something like a breakup or whatever, it was like, okay, what do I need to change about myself? Or what can I control to make myself feel better? And so all of a sudden, my mentality in that time was, okay, I'm just going to spend this time, instead of thinking about the relationship and the breakup, I'm going to run more and get back, quote unquote, like back into shape.
Yeah, like revenge body with Khloe Kardashian.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. Like, I was just talking to someone about this. Like, as women, that's the first thing we do when we go through any sort of like relationship hardship is, oh, what do I need to change about myself? Which is so sad. Mm-hmm. So that really, I remember, like, I was on a run actually, like right after this happened, and I was thinking about it, and I just realized, I was like, Jess, you've done this over and over and over, and clearly this isn't working. Like, what you're doing is not working, and you have to do something different. So I actually challenged myself to, and this is when I really started blogging, and it was the first time I opened up about any of these issues that I'd been experiencing about body image and over exercising and under eating and all of that. So I did this kind of 30-day challenge with myself. And I said, you know, you're going to listen to your body for these 30 days. So when you wake up in the morning, if you feel like going to yoga, cool, go to yoga. If you just want to walk, walk. If you need to rest, rest. And I really, really, really tried for those 30 days just to listen to the signals that my body was sending and tried to rest as much as I possibly could. So for me, that was the first step. And then I started educating myself more. You know, again, I realized what I was doing wasn't working and clearly things were off balance. So I just started learning more about the hormones and the body and exercise and the stress response in the body and specific to running. And what I started realizing was, you know, when we run, we're inducing that stress response in the body, and your adrenal glands produce your cortisol and adrenaline, but they also produce DHA, testosterone, and other sex hormones. So when you're putting all the stress on your adrenals and they're overproducing these stress hormones, they end up underproducing the sex hormones. And then eventually, when they're working so hard, you get fatigued, which leads to like to the adrenal fatigue. And the other thing I started learning about running and cardio was your body adapts to what you're doing. So when you're doing all this cardio and all this running, your body becomes too efficient with calories. So you actually start burning less calories and you start to signal your metabolism to slow down. It was really mind-blowing, but also really helpful just to get kind of the science behind all of it and really understand how delicate our hormones are. And then in addition to that, learning that times that we're more stressed out, we actually need to be backing off the exercise, you know, doing the yoga, doing the walking. And then I think the other big thing for me was during those 30 days, you know, I didn't gain weight all of a sudden out of nowhere. That happened later due to, you know, some other gut things that I was happening. But like, nothing changed drastically. I didn't die. I didn't, you know, I was still
But did you die?
I know, right? But did you die? Oh, God, that makes me so mad. So I think that was the beginning for me of recognizing that I really needed to make some drastic changes. And it was just really being more in tune with my body and trying to listen to what my body was telling me. That being said, I also struggled with my identity was running and being quote unquote fit and healthy. So during this 30-day challenge I gave to myself, I also really tried to find other things that filled me up. I did some volunteer work. I started blogging. And for me, that was another huge piece to my recovery, is that first blog I put out when I opened up about all of this, the amount of people that responded and were thanking me for sharing my story and relating to what I was going through, I was like, wow, I'm not alone. And this, I can help other people. Like, I can connect with other people. And that, I think, was the most, you know, motivating thing for me to make some pretty serious changes.
Yeah, that's really cool, because I had a similar experience with when I was taking like a couple months off of exercise to try and fix all of the shit that I had going on. That's also when I started my blog. But props to you, because when I started my blog, it was something to just fill my time and talk about like the recipes that I was using to heal myself. But I wasn't actually talking about the root of what I was healing myself from. You know, I talked about leaky gut and I talked about the adrenal fatigue, but I didn't talk about why I had those in the first place, you know. And it took me probably a year and a half, if not 2 years, to actually come out and say all of the, you know, crazy stuff that had been going on in my head, and then disordered eating and, you know, all of this other stuff. It took me a while to actually realize that I needed to not only admit this to myself, but get it off my chest in a way that I knew would be helpful to other people. Because I'm sure, as you know, as soon as you, as someone, whether you're a blogger or a practitioner or just, you know, as a person who influences other people in their life, as soon as you come out and say, like, share, I've been having these struggles, more people are then empowered and willing to open up and share their own, which then they can begin their own healing journey from. So it's really empowering to do that as well. So props to you.
Thank you. Yeah. And it's so true. I do think, you know, you have to be ready for that, though. I think admitting it to yourself is the hardest part. You know, for a long time, people in my life, you know, my mom was always concerned about how much I was eating and, you know, thought I was getting too thin. And I remember I have a really close friend and also colleague, and he would kind of make fun of, not make fun, but crack jokes about my running, you know, and that I was addicted to it. And, but, you know, looking back, I'm like, he was right. He was absolutely right. It was an addiction. And, but I, because it started out as something that I really truly loved and enjoyed, it's hard to admit to yourself, you know, that you're in this unhealthy place with whatever is going on. That is really, I mean, it is the hardest part. So, you know, I think for people that maybe know it but don't want to admit it, admitting it is probably the first step, really, that you need to do. Admitting it and then getting some support, whether that's through a blog or, you know, coming out. Shouldn't do that term. But like, you know, talking to a friend or family or whatever, and just not trying to do it alone, because that can be really, really terrifying.
Yeah, and it's really hard to be objective about this kind of stuff too, because like you were saying, your friends were able to pick up on it, and you know, they might have been kind of making jokes about it, but that might have been their way to show that they were actually really concerned for you, but they didn't know how to bring it up. Mm-hmm. And when we're the one in this situation, it's hard to see until you have, whether it's a practitioner or a therapist or a friend or, you know, whatever it is, someone to really assess everything that's been going on and just kind of do a brain dump with them, because it's much easier for them to connect the dots than it is for you. Because if you're not at a place where you're ready to accept that something that you love might be the root of this problem, or insecurities that you have might be fueling the root of the problem, it's really hard to admit that to yourself. And if you're not ready, you might kind of intentionally overlook that, or just not even see that as, you know, running can't be the cause of all of this, because I love running and that is my identity and I've been an athlete and, you know, I can't let go of that because I have a lot of anxiety and running is the cure for my anxiety. And so, I mean, that's something else that I wanted to talk about, because a big underlying theme in all of this is like stress and fear of gaining weight and the physical stress that we put on our bodies from not only the overexercising and the undereating, but then the physiological stress that results from that and from the hormonal dysfunction and the gut issues and everything like this. And it's just really hard to wrap your head around, what can I substitute for something that, like running or CrossFit or spin or whatever it is, something that is bringing you joy and you do use as an anxiety reliever, but is actually making you much worse in the long term?
Yeah, and that's so hard. And yeah, it's true. It's really difficult to pinpoint and admit that when it is something that you truly love. And I get that a lot. It's like, well, I use this for stress relief. And it's like, but it's not actually relieving stress for you. You know, it's doing the opposite. You know, for me, walking was something that was huge. And I think we really overlook the benefits of walking. I mean, as humans, we weren't meant to be doing these like just hour-long intense workouts, and that's the only movement we get, and then we're sitting behind a computer for the rest of the day. You know, naturally, we're supposed to be moving throughout the day, you know? So going on walks for me was really helpful. At the time, I was still at my desk job, so I would set an alarm on my phone and I would just go outside and you know, do a couple loops, listen to a podcast, listen to a meditation, whatever it is. On the weekends, going for longer walks, you know, just because our advice might be to back off exercise doesn't mean you have to all of a sudden be a couch potato and do nothing at all. So I think exploring like other movements that you can do, such as walking. Walking also is going to get you out in nature, which is proven to reduce cortisol and reduce anxiety and stress. So, you know, vitamin D, you know, getting natural vitamin D from the sunlight is pretty much the main way to get it. And vitamin D is super important for hormone production and so many other functions in the body. So walking is great because it gives you all those benefits in one, and you're moving your body. I know, I mean, I've always loved yoga. I teach yoga, so I was still doing yoga, which was helpful for me because again, that's focusing on breath and movement and stretching, and I really enjoy that. And during this time is when I started also just kind of rebuilding my Pure Living business. So again, I continued with the blogging for that. You know, that was a great outlet for stress for me, was just connecting with people. It may not be for someone else, but you know, I think looking at other alternatives and even thinking about, you know, things that you love to do when you were younger. Like maybe you love to draw and you haven't picked up a, you know, a drawing book in 10 years, you know, or maybe you want to go take an acting class or comedy. I just think it's use it as a time to really figure out what does fuel you. Because when it comes down to it, it's cool to identify yourself with being a really good athlete or a really good CrossFitter. But if that's truly your only identity, that's not balanced. You know, the fact that like this idea of this one thing being your entire life and your entire identity and you don't know what to do without it, that's not healthy. You know, you need other things to identify who you really are. And, you know, being an athlete is great and I respect that. But, you know, you're also maybe you're a great mom or a great friend or a great daughter or a great, you know, girlfriend or wife or whatever. We've just so lost touch with these other areas of our lives that are just as important.
Yeah, and I think speaking about that, like it's really smart to not just wrap yourself up in one identity, even if it is, you know, a daughter, a mother, you know, a dog mom, whatever it is, you know, because everything has a finite like limit to it. Especially like this is an easy example if you are an athlete, and for most athletes, like it either stops in high school or it stops after college. And then, like, what are you going to do after that? Because even if you are like an exerciser, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that you are an athlete anymore. And if you've tied your identity up in being super fit or being the healthy friend or, you know, being an athlete in college, you know, what comes after that? You kind of have to have a backup plan. Because even for professional athletes, like if you look at, you know, the NFL, the average, like, not lifespan, but the average career of like a running back in the NFL is like between 3 and 5 years. And, you know, so say they go to college, they get recruited in the first round of the draft or whatever it is, and then they play for 3 to 5 years and then they're done. You know, like your life isn't over when you're 30 or, you know, 35 or 40 or whenever it is. You still have the rest of your very long life, which hopefully is going to be like a very happy and fulfilled life. So the most successful athletes in like life have kind of a backup plan, and they start doing charity work, or they start, you know, they start a foundation, or they start something else that allows them to further that passion, but their identity is no longer wrapped up in, I was an athlete, and this is the only thing that I'm ever going to be good at. You know, another example of this is like child actors. If their entire identity is wrapped up in being an actor, and, you know, they peak at like 8 or 12 or 15 or whatever it is. This is why a lot of them then have problems with addiction and depression and all this other stuff, because from such a young age, this was their identity and they don't know where to go from there. So, as much as we can, in terms of the healing process, you want to try and learn to not just wrap your identity up in, I am a runner, I am a CrossFitter, I am a swimmer, I am, you know, whatever it is, because, you know, say you get injured or something, maybe it's not even adrenal fatigue and all this other stuff. Like, that's why also a lot of athletes that get injuries are then depressed because they're not fulfilled because they don't know what to do. So always have a backup plan and figure out other things that can fulfill you so that, you know, God forbid something happens to whatever identity that you have, it's not the end of the world for you.
Yeah, that I love that point. It's so interesting. I actually just did a podcast interview for my podcast last week, and you guys can listen to it, but just long story short, his entire life, he was focused on getting into the Navy. That was his entire life. And he was then diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, which you cannot go into the Navy if you have. And he talks on the podcast about how he just dove into drugs and alcohol and a really bad place because that was literally his goal for his whole life. And now all of a sudden he couldn't achieve that goal and he had no backup plan. And so, yeah, that's such an important advice and important topic. Another thing is, you know, I was running 6 days a week, probably, you know, 20 plus miles a week. When you cut that out, you have a lot of friggin' time left, you know, like, which was really nice. Like, you know, going back, it's like, oh my gosh, I was always running from one place to another and, like, you know, crunching these things in. Cause like I said, I had to get the run in. So all of a sudden, just having time to breathe and having more time to explore these other things, you know, explore blogging, explore digging deeper into myself. And, you know, another thing I will say is I did a lot of work too with where these beliefs come from to begin with. You know, I've been in therapy. I advocate for therapy for everyone. I did a lot of mindset work on my own. So I do think it's important if you are, you know, if you've dealt with some of these things that we're talking about, to really dig into where those stem from and work on not just self-love. I think we talk about self-love a lot, which is important, but also self-forgiveness, mm-hmm. and really figuring out, you know, why those thoughts, you know, were created in the first place. Not beating yourself up over it though, but really working on, like, forgiving yourself and moving forward with this new kind of mindset and outlook.
Yeah, forgiving yourself. And then once you do figure out where those thoughts and beliefs came from, sometimes it's also being able to forgive other people that may have made you believe those things that, you know, you'd been harking on for so long. Because I was actually just talking about this with my friend Christina earlier, but once you have some of these beliefs, whether it's from your childhood and you've observed it with other people, or some, you know, ex-boyfriend or whoever it was told you, oh my gosh, you would be so much prettier if you were a little bit skinnier, which is something that actually happened to me when I was younger.
But oh God.
Then, yeah. But then as soon as you hear that, then the messages that you receive from social media and from media and from other people are all filtered through that lens. And you're almost looking for things to reinforce that, you know, and then you're looking for ways to control and fix yourself and all this kind of stuff. And so mm-hmm. I think it's important to note that once you figure out where those beliefs came from and you kind of dismantle all of that, it's important to not hold hatred towards that person or that situation or whatever it was that caused you to have those beliefs, because you can't fully heal if you're holding some kind of, you know, hatred, or if you don't forgive, you know, that person or whoever it was or whatever the situation was, or at least come to peace with it. Because you can't truly heal if you're holding on to all of this negative energy and just placing the blame on, you know, shifting the blame basically from yourself to someone else.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's easy to, you know, you use the term fix yourself. And that's where I was stuck for so long. You know, when I started getting these symptoms, I was looking for any fix, you know, Googling, like, you know, weight gain, no period, you know, I would just spend hours and hours in agony trying to figure it out. And don't get me wrong, I mean, you know, like, eating more, shifting my mindset around food, exercising less, those are important. But there is the whole just mindset and emotional piece as well that's just as important. And people, it's easy to overlook that because that's the hardest part. You know, it's easier to say, okay, cool, yeah, I can make some diet changes and take these supplements. It's a lot harder to figure out, wow, like, what, why do I think these things about myself? Like, where, you know, where along the road did this happen, and how can I change that? But one cool thing is, as I've done all this work, is one thing I've really noticed, and I'd be interested to see if you can relate to this as well, is my relationships, you know, not just romantic, but like even just friendships. Like, I look at the friendships I had throughout high school and college. And I mean, I still have a couple close friends from those periods in my life, but gosh, my relationships were so surface level. It's incredible. And which makes sense, because I was, you know, all I cared about was aesthetics and how I looked. I didn't really have any other passions. And since doing these shifts and finding, you know, what I'm passionate about, finding who I am aside from just, you know, that fit runner girl, whatever, the relationships I've cultivated over the last few years are some of the just, I mean, I can't even put into words. They're so much deeper. They're people that I connect with on so many levels that I can talk to about anything, that motivate me, that inspire me, that, you know, really, really lift me up. And, you know, I wouldn't be here without those relationships. So that's kind of cool, is really kind of looking at that too. You know, who are you surrounding yourself with? And that is going to change as you, you know, shift what's important to you and what your values are.
Yeah. And I mean, that's much easier said than done too, because especially if you've been friends with someone for so long, or you were friends with them in college, or you roomed with them or whatever, if you notice that they are someone who reinforces these beliefs that you used to have about yourself, or the values you used to hold and you're trying to release now, it's, you kind of go through a grieving period, you know, and you're like, in order to kind of stand up for yourself and progress and move forward with this better relationship with yourself and your body and food and all of this stuff, you have to let go of some of those surface level relationships, of the people who used to over-exercise with you at the gym and you used to talk badly about yourselves and say you were fat even though you never were, or, you know, they were talking about, oh, I'm just gonna, I can only eat these things today, or, oh, we're at this party at night and, you know, binge drinking and everything, but it's okay because tomorrow we're gonna go on the elliptical for 3 hours and then do abs. And I mean, it's funny now, but it's so stupid, because this is the shit that we used to do.
I know.
You know, and it's just, it's crazy because it's so normalized, you know, to the point where if you're not doing that, it's kind of looked down upon. And I don't know what it's going to take to change that culture in high school and on college campuses, and also for former athletes when they get out of college, because this is a big, this is what I ran into, and I know a lot of my friends ran into, is if, like you were saying before, like high school, you never really looked at what you ate. You just kind of exercised all the time because you were on sports teams. And then for me, like, I swam and then did CrossFit in college. So even though I was starting to control my food then, as much as I was controlling my food and exercise then, it became even more when I was out of college, because I didn't have that structured exercise anymore. And people freak out because there is no education for anyone, at least not in my experience, in all of the like D1, D2, D3 athletes that I've worked with. No one talks about how you should eat to fuel your body and be healthy after you finish athletics. And it's a huge problem. And there's, you know, there's the food, there's the physical, there's the mental, emotional side of that. And it's just like a big spider web that no one's ever really talking about.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And it, I mean, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, there's no education really on how to fuel your body appropriate. You know, I mean, as a, even like a high school athlete, I wasn't eating well, you know, I was, you know, eating what I wanted. And then I did try out like the lean. I remember I ate Lean Cuisines all the time when I was like junior, senior in high school, when I started thinking about calories. Oh God, so gross. But anyways, but yeah, that's so true that, I just think continuing to do things like these, you know, podcasts and, you know, the businesses that we have and trying to spread that message is really the way that it will happen, hopefully.
So I want to get back to, you know, this whole cluster of symptoms that is very, very common when you lose your period. So what would you say is like a typical train of events or like cluster of symptoms that leads people to have this amenorrhea or losing their cycles for like an extended period of time?
Yeah, really good question. So there are a few different forms of amenorrhea, but hypothalamic amenorrhea is definitely one of the most common and is what I work with the most, which is specifically related to, you know, thyroid and adrenal dysfunction, which is generally caused from overexercising as well as undereating. So I'd say the biggest things are having a history of, you know, working out 6 to 7 days a week, mainly cardio, restricting calories. If you have a history of dieting, yo-yo dieting, whether you're dieting now or not, if you have a history of doing that, that can definitely have an impact. Birth control is another big one because that can really screw up hormones. So those are sort of the biggest factors, I think, that lead to it. In terms of symptoms, I mean, obviously not getting your period would be one. I know fatigue was a big one for me, and especially with that history of overexercising. So, you know, you do an exercise that you used to do and feel great after, and then all of a sudden you're on the couch and you can't move. So that fatigue is a big one. I know sleep issues, because that's generally when this is all happening, your cortisol levels are going to be off because your adrenals are so taxed. So it can start out as feeling super wired and tired, so you're exhausted, but you can't fall asleep. And then once you're in severe adrenal fatigue, your cortisol is tanked, so you're just exhausted all the time. Waking up at like 2, 3 in the morning. And then I know the bloating was a big one for me. I mean, I felt bloated and inflamed all of the time. And weight gain too. You know, I don't like to measure health in terms of like weight or scale or anything. But, you know, I did, like I said, I gained 20 pounds in a couple months out of nowhere, which that's clearly not normal. That's a sign that my body, you know, something is off.
Right, without changing anything about your exercise or food or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so that would be like your unexplained weight gain. And then weight loss resistance. You know, I had to get to a place where I was super accepting of, I had to look at it as, okay, this is my body like screaming at me to do something, and I need to make changes based on my health, not based on my aesthetics, and looking at that as a sign for my body, not freaking out about the fact that I couldn't fit into my jeans anymore, mm-hmm. Which is scary, but at the same time, again, this is your body giving you a message. So I'd say those are some of the biggest kind of signs and symptoms, and then sort of if you have that history and you aren't getting your period, then the chances of it being amenorrhea are pretty high.
Yeah. And then say you do have, you know, you have the gut stuff, the adrenal stuff, the thyroid stuff, like all of these things. How do you decide when you're working with someone, where do you start to start like dismantling all of this, but then also give them some symptom relief at first? Like, obviously you're not going to get your period back in a month, but what can you do to help them in the short term and then in the long term?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, that will vary based on the person, obviously, just based on where they're at in terms of how much they're currently exercising, how much they're currently eating. I mean, that's what I always start with, though, is most clients coming from this background that come to me, I'm like, okay, for the next 30 days, like, we are resting. Like, you are giving your body as much rest as it needs, whether that's napping, sleeping in, not working out, going on walks, you know, really, really rest. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, that's scary. So I do recommend working with someone, because it is going to be really, really hard and really uncomfortable. So yeah, so rest would be the first one. And then blood sugar is big as well, especially when you're dealing with adrenal fatigue issues. So balancing blood sugar is going to rebalance hormones. It's also going to bring cortisol levels back into balance, which will help with sleeping and feeling more energized. So taking a look at blood sugar. And for that, there is, you know, again, depending on where they're coming from and what they're eating, there are certain changes you can make in, you know, diet and food. Getting a ton of healthy fat is really, really important. That is one thing I always work on with clients. And when you're coming from this history of over-exercising and under-eating, there's sometimes a fear of fat. But adding fat back into the diet is huge. I mean, that's necessary to build hormones. It's going to keep you satiated. It's going to balance your blood sugar. So getting really good sources of healthy fats, you know, avocados, nuts, seeds, all that type of stuff. And then in terms of gut health, you know, I know for me that was, I was just so uncomfortable with the bloating and everything. And that will be different for everyone. I personally, you know, I was dealing with a parasite, which I found out through a stool test. But there are other things, you know, that you can do to support the gut, potentially eliminating more inflammatory foods for a period of time, Hydrochloric acid, most people are deficient in that. So supplementing with that can really help to support just digestion until things are, you know, back on track. And then I would really, you know, with my clients, like, take a look at hormone panels, because it will be different for everyone. Like I said, amenorrhea can be caused from different things. So one person may have too much estrogen, where another person might be dealing with not enough. So it is important to get those test results and take a look at that. But there are a lot of natural ways that you can support those things through, you know, food, supplement, herbs, teas, essential oils. Those are sort of kind of the main things that I use with my clients, you know, during that healing process. But I love that you mentioned you're probably not going to get your period back in a month. So that's the biggest message I like to send people, is this takes time and you have to be patient and accepting of that. So looking at other markers for your health, right? So rather than saying, okay, I'll know I'm healthy when I get my period back. Sure, yes, that's a great sign, but there are so many other things we can look at: your energy levels, your sleep quality, your digestion, you know, your blood sugar, your cravings, all of that. So I really encourage people to look at other factors in terms of measuring their healing and their health too, because those are what will keep you motivated on the days that you're feeling like, okay, I'm doing all these things and, you know, I feel like I'm taking two steps forward and one step back, which will happen, you know? So I think just really focusing on those other areas is super important.
Yeah. Well, healing is never a linear process either. You know, it's like ups and downs, peaks and valleys. It's like a cardiograph, basically. Totally.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I went from parasite to bacteria to candida to, you know, but I have to, you know, another cool reminder though is, you know, in this healing process, let's say you're, you know, on whatever protocol and then you do something or, you know, you're not feeling well. It's like whatever you did to make yourself not feel well, you didn't undo all the healing that you have done previously, you know? So it's not like this like black and white, oh, I'm falling off the wagon because I'm on a diet type of a thing. You know, this is a process. And, you know, just because maybe you do something that's not on whatever protocol you're on, or maybe you, you know, push yourself a little too hard and now you're exhausted and you recognize that, cool, like recognize it, accept it, don't beat yourself up, and know that that's not going to diminish like the healing that you've already done up to that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one thing that's always really important to remember, if you're, you know, whether you're on this journey of healing or you're trying to assess whether you're going in the right direction, is to remember that you can't heal in the same environment in which you got sick. So you have to really examine not only like the physical circumstances and the food and the exercise and the stress and the hormones and everything like that, but really getting the whole picture of everything that was going on, especially with your mindset, you know, because you can make all of these changes, but if at the end of it, you're only willing to make enough changes to the point where you don't gain any weight or you don't gain a certain amount of weight, you're not going to heal all the way, especially with something like a missing cycle or amenorrhea or, you know, for however long it is, because like we were saying before, this is not going to be fixed in a month. I have some clients that who haven't had their cycle in 6 or 7 years. And so it's like, this might take a year or two in order to get your cycle back. And for a lot of those people, one of the reasons that they haven't gotten their cycle back in so long, even though they've realized that this is a problem and they have thyroid issues and they have all these other things and estrogen is bottomed out and cortisol is bottomed out, they're still afraid of gaining weight. And most of the time in this situation, you need to gain a considerable amount of weight in order to get your cycles back. And not only get your cycles back, but to get your health back. Mm-hmm. And so there's a big mental, emotional component around that, which is why I always advocate working with a therapist, because even though I'm also an IAN health coach and I'm also a clinical nutritionist, like I don't have a background in therapy. So as much as I can talk about mindful eating and intuitive eating and loving your body and stuff, it is super complementary to working with a nutrition practitioner, to working with a therapist who can help you through all this stuff. But make sure your therapist has some kind of background and training in emotional eating or disordered eating and body image stuff and all of this, because as much as therapists are fantastic, just similar to nutritionists and doctors, like everyone has a specialty. So you want to make sure that you find someone who's going to specialize in the things that you really need.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, I'm glad you brought that up because yes, if you're dealing with amenorrhea, gaining weight is most likely something you will have to do. And another thing I like to point out is if you're, you know, in terms of like body composition, you know, like I'm cool with like, if you want to go lift some heavy weights and like you want to build some muscle, that is awesome. I've gotten, you know, that's my workouts now. I do weightlifting like 3 times a week, full body weightlifting workouts, and I love it. Now, when I started doing that, I didn't see any changes in my body composition because I was still really sick. I was still dealing with these hormone imbalances. I was still focused on just getting healthy and my metabolism was all out of whack. It's pretty much impossible to change your body composition when your body's not healthy anyways. Mm-hmm. So it's like running on this hamster wheel. You know, not only are you going to make yourself sicker, but you're not going to make any progress because you can't change your body composition unless you are healthy first.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think really, you know, wrapping your head around that and, you know, more recently, I did eventually notice some small shifts, you know, as my hormones started balancing and as I continued to still eat a ton of food, not do cardio, you know, have a healthy amount of exercise, you know, I saw some small changes. And so I think that's important too, is, you know, when you're in this healing process, you exactly like your body aesthetics just cannot be your goal. It just can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for you and for your clients also, what have been the most helpful, obviously besides working with you, like resources, books, websites, and podcasts mm-hmm. and stuff that were helpful to you or that you like to recommend for your clients? And I can include yes. all of these in the show notes and stuff.
Cool. I love this question. So many things. So I definitely, I'll go with like books first. You're a Badass by Jen Sincero is just amazing for just confidence and like women empowerment. And I mean, just a really, really great one. So mm-hmm. I'd say that's one. The Universe Has Your Back by Gabrielle Bernstein. And then Ask and It Is Given by Abraham Hicks. I am like everything Abraham Hicks. I just love her. She also has a YouTube channel. Honestly, the YouTube channel has helped me tremendously. You can literally search any topic, like going through a breakup, you know, need a new job, you know, like fear of gaining weight, all of that. And she has talks about them. So anytime I started feeling myself, you know, had these negative thoughts would come back up or I'd start getting anxiety or fear or whatever. I know for me, the worst thing to do is just to sit and fester in that.
Yep.
So I go out, I put on one of her YouTube videos, I pop my earbuds in, I go for a walk and listen to it. And every time I feel significantly better once I come back. Mm-hmm. So those are really great. Journaling has been really helpful for me as well. And, you know, I think for someone, I know for me, this isn't something I used to do. It can be a little daunting, but there's so many different ways you can journal. You know, you can free write, you can just, you know, write down what you're grateful for. You know, it's really, when you're truly focusing on the small little things that you're grateful for, it's hard to go to that negative place. Mm-hmm. You know, things like waking up and saying, wow, I slept really well last night for the first time in so long, you know, or, oh my gosh, I have this view of the mountains from my apartment. Like just the little things, I think just having like a gratitude journal or just like a free writing journal are great.
Yeah.
Another thing that I haven't used a ton personally, but I've used, played around with a little bit and I've heard from clients and other people it's really helpful is EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique, which you can, again, look up YouTube videos, you can do it on your own. It's pretty much just like tapping certain points on your body. And this is really helpful for if you are dealing with some anxiety and fear mm-hmm. Or some of the things that you're going through. And then lastly would be meditation. And this is another one I think people get a little fearful of, thinking they have to sit in silence for an hour.
Well, especially people that have like anxiety or like, you know, we're used to the go, go, go and over-exercise yeah. and all this stuff and control because you think you don't have time to meditate and you like worry that you're wasting time when you're even sitting down for 5 minutes just trying to be. And then it's like, you probably spend more than an hour a day on Instagram. So you could take five of those minutes to just meditate.
So true. I'm like, I have time to watch Netflix. So I do have time to meditate. Mm-hmm. Insight Timer is the app that I use. And it's great because they have anywhere from like 1 minute meditations to 3 hour meditations. So you can literally sit for a minute, and everyone has a minute in their day that they can sit down and take a quick little break. And I know a minute doesn't sound like a long time, but it will make a difference, you know, even if you're doing it once a day or twice a day and then, you know, slowly upping it. And like I said, meditation could be just going out for a walk with nothing, like leave your phone, leave your headphones, and just go for a walk and be with yourself and breathe and relax. And again, these are all things that for me, I come from that go, go, go all the time personality. And I started to recognize that even times when I thought I was quote unquote resting, I wasn't. Like I'd be in my apartment and I'd be on the couch and I'd be like, oh, I have to send that email. Oh, I need to get the dishes out of the dishwasher. Oh wait, I should do laundry. And after like an hour of what was supposed to be relaxing, I'm like, oh shit, I didn't relax.
You're like more tired than you were.
Yeah. So it's definitely a shift, but it's one that I've worked really hard on and has certainly made a huge, huge impact, and one that I see have a huge impact with my clients too. And then lastly is essential oils. I love using oils. There's so much you can do with them. So whether it's diffusing them or, you know, for anxiety, I've been using like wild orange in the morning and inhaling that. So that's another tool that I put in my toolbox as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay. Well, thank you. This has been amazing. I'm sure I will have you back on the podcast because I know I will get a lot of questions about this episode. please tell people where they can find you so they can go follow you and for all the goodies and stuff.
I love it. Yeah. So on Instagram, that's definitely where I'm most active. I'm Jess Pure Living. And then second most active would be my website, which is my name, jessicachristin.com. So it's JessicaChristin.com. And yeah, I specialize at this point in hormones, specifically women dealing with amenorrhea. So I do have a bunch of free guides and handouts, as well as a free 5-day course that is all steps that I took to start to rebalance to get my period back. So if you are someone dealing with that, that could be a great option for you.
And then we forgot to talk about your podcast. Plug that too.
Yes. Oh yeah. I forgot. I just started the Pure Living podcast. There's been 2 episodes. The 3rd episode comes out this Thursday. Yeah. I'm really excited about it. Honestly, the underlying goal of the podcast is to kind of do what we were talking about today, is just break through this wall of social media bullshit and, you know, comparing ourselves to other people that are putting these pictures of perfection every single day, because clearly, as we've learned on this podcast, life is not perfect. You know, it gets messy. It's beautiful. It's great, but it also gets messy and we go through hard things. So that's sort of the basis of it. So I have topics ranging everywhere from talking to people that have experienced eating disorders. Today, I'm actually interviewing a guy who was in jail. He was a 3-time felon and then got out and created this super successful boxing business. So it's a little bit all over the map, but it's really just to inspire people to live, you know, their most authentic lives. So definitely pop over there and listen. And I'll be having Dana on as well, which will be great.
Yeah, we're going to do that interview tomorrow.
Yeah, stoked.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dana. It was great chatting.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dana. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes, and come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes.